this week, we talk about the French Revolution. Is there a connection to the American Revolution? And just how far did Freemasonry extend its hands into the French Revolution? Then, we'll contemplate about the origins of inspiration. Where does it come from? The Akashic Record? Some divine presence reaching down and touching the minds of those so inspired? Or something else entirely? We'll wrap it up with a piece that comes out of the Masonic Craftsman magazine published all the way back in 1938. A rather poetic piece that ties everything together for the week. All this and more, stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 613. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of this podcast. It is through their support that this show happens. If you are curious on how you could help support the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options, both through Patreon and PayPal. Not much in the news, so let's get right into this week's education. We're going to start it off diving right back into where we left off in Stephen L. Harrison's Seeds of Dissent, The Origins of Anti-Masonry, Part 3. If you're curious on Parts 1 and 2, please check out episode number 608 and number 610. Let's get right into it. Seeds of Dissent, The Origins of Anti-Masonry, Part 3, Revolution, by Midnight Freemason Emeritus Contributor Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd Degree, Fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research. Anti-Masonry did not see a lot of growth during the era of the American Revolution. Colonists were, after all, preoccupied with other things. It is also a well-known fact that many Freemasons, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, John Hancock, and a nearly endless list of others, supported the cause. Not only that, the Revolution was fought for liberty and equality, ideals that were consistent with those of the fraternity. The perceived secrecy added to the mystique of the order, and most saw membership as a desirable enhancement to one's status. Still, the same objections to the craft that had always been there, suspicion of its secrecy, objections by organized religions, the perception of elitism, and rumors of conspiracies continued to plague the Masons. A few years after the American Revolution, the French Revolution came along, and with it a complex relationship with Freemasonry. A number of factors, including social inequality, financial problems due to the monarchy's extravagance, taxes, and the king's weak leadership, led to public dissatisfaction, culminating with the storming of the Bastille on July 14th, 1789. The Enlightenment, with its ideas about reason and individual rights, appealed to the populace and was also a factor leading to its discontent. These same ideals promulgated by the Enlightenment were not at all inconsistent with progressive Masonic thinking, leading many prominent Freemasons to support the Revolution. Among these were the Marquis de Lafayette, George Danton, John Sylvain Bailly, Count Volney, and Comte de Mirbeau. The end of the Revolution became a tumultuous period known as the French Reign of Terror, categorized by extreme repression. The Committee on Public Safety sprang up in order to deal with threats to the Revolution and the newly formed Republic. Although formed to suppress counter-revolutionary forces and protect the Revolution, the Reign of Terror soon devolved into a violent force, using accusations of treason to settle personal conflicts. Not all Freemasons supported the Revolution, but many of them supported it initially until the violence of the Reign of Terror emerged. As such, some of those same Masons who were supporters of the Revolution were later declared its enemies. Danton and Bailly were both declared traitors and guillotined when they became disenchanted with the committee's violent tactics. Mirbeau and Lafayette changed their views but escaped the wrath of the Reign of Terror Pierre Samuel Dupont de Nemours, who also fell into this group, escaped the guillotine only because the head of the Reign of Terror, Maximilien Robespierre, was executed beforehand. Without the existence of definitive data, it is probably safe to assume Freemasons, more than not, supported both revolutions. In the case of the French Revolution, it is probable Masonic support did not extend to the Reign of Terror. In both cases, anti-Masonry may have been aligned with those in opposition to the revolutions, or, later, part of Robespierre's terrorism. Well, here we have, in this piece, a little more about the French Revolution. It's often claimed that Masons had such a hand in the American Revolution, which I believe is pretty indisputable. More claims, however, always talk about Masons always having a hand in the Revolution, and it always pops up that Masonry and the French Revolution go hand in hand. The country's motto, liberty, equality, fraternity, always cited. I think this is a very interesting look at how far Masons are willing to go. Yes, to support the revolution. No, to its violent tactics. It doesn't get much more Masonic than that, especially when we're talking about this idea of progressive Masonic thinking, the Enlightenment. One could certainly make the case that this Masonic Enlightenment in progressive thinking has been stagnated in the craft today, which may or may not be true depending on your particular view of this. Personally, I've talked about this time and time again. I feel that the world has largely surpassed the Masonic fraternity in its progressive ideologies, but that's not what this is about. I really enjoyed this extra look in terms of anti-Masonry with this supplemental information from outside of the United States and across the pond. Very cool. Our thanks goes out, of course, to Stephen L. Harrison for all he's done for the fraternity, his consistent work in Masonic research and history, and for making it all accessible to us. Next up, I want to read this piece. It's not a very long one. However, it was very interesting. It's called The Masonic Muse, Where Does Inspiration Come From? We've talked about inspiration as being something in the past, as being something that happens when you witness something extraordinary, something that touches you intrinsically and says, hey, we can do that. We can be that good. We can do this thing. Maybe it means we can do it also. Maybe it means we can add to it. Maybe it means that we can do it better. Whatever the case is, we talk about where this comes from, and is it merely this idea of witnessing something, or does it come from somewhere else? Let's check out what Pamela McDown has to say. The Masonic Muse. Where does inspiration come from? The muses of Greek mythology and legend are those beings that exist beyond the material plane and communicate ideas and inspiration from planes beyond our perception. How does Freemasonry draw us into communication with them? Inspiration is a mystical, magical thing that grasps the artist, the poet, the inventor, the Freemason, and even the scientist. Throughout history, artists, musicians, poets, and playwrights have professed that their creative works did not originate solely from their own abilities or genius, but rather from a force of divinity transcending them. They felt inspired, becoming the vessel through which something truly beautiful could manifest in the world. I have always wondered what inspires creativity. Why does one person excel as a physician, another as a novelist, and yet a third as a legislator? Why do some fortunate people seem overly endowed with an abundance of creativity, the most precious of gifts, and others with little or none at all? What inspires the Freemason? Freemasons are asked at the opening of every lodge meeting to meditate on the good, the true, and the beautiful. Brother C. Gennardassa wrote that finding the beautiful is a factor in the soul's evolution. Poetry, sculpture, song, dance, architecture, music, Masonic ritual, all these aspects of life are so many magic doors which open new regions of life. He says that this quote-unquote beautiful is in every one of us. And when we realize this, we are going to realize that this is the greatest power we have. When this greatest power which is in us is realized, then we will truly be the builders of a better world. But we're not there yet. Unfortunately, beauty and inspiration have fallen on hard times. In our materialistic modern world, we have little sense of where true genius comes from. But it wasn't always so. What can we learn from the ancient Greeks? The Nine Muses in Greek mythology. In Greek mythology, the Muses held a significant role as wellsprings of inspiration. They oversaw both the realms of arts and sciences, frequently offering assistance and direction to individuals in their pursuit of extraordinary ideas and breakthroughs. It was believed that the Muses had the ability to convey inspirations from higher realms, granting us glimpses beyond our everyday existence. In doing so, they established channels of communication that spanned the divides within our mental and emotional landscapes. Residing on Mount Helicon, the Nine Muses frequently kept company with the god Apollo, whose realm often intersected with theirs. He governed domains like music, light, eloquence, poetry, and the sun. Each of the Nine Muses had a name and a field of service. Calliope inspired epic poetry. Erato inspired love poetry. Euterpe inspired lyric poetry. Melpomene inspired tragedy. Talia inspired comedy. Clio inspired history. Urania inspired astronomy. Polyhymnia inspired sacred songs. Terpsichore inspired dance. Muses were important to the Greeks, no doubt, but the world has changed a lot since ancient times. With so many arts and sciences nowadays, the Nine Muses of yore are not enough. This led me to think about the Muses associated with the art of Freemasonry. Is there one or more? How was a Freemason creatively inspired? The Masonic Divas. In the book, At the Sign of the Square and Compasses, Brother Jeffrey Hodson writes about the existence of Masonic Divas. When I thought about it, these divas could also be considered Muses by a broader definition. Brother Hodson claims that during Masonic ceremonies there is a diva attached to each of the various offices and a number of others that move freely about the temple and hover in the air overhead. They cooperate with the brethren in all the work and bring an additional measure of power and beauty to the workings. For example, he says, the deacons who guide the candidates in the lodge receive inspiration from a diva who appears to be a sylph. During the ceremony, the deacons move beautifully through the lodge as glorious radiant beings. Through their vehicles, they receive energy and vitality which is liberated into the lodge and into the candidate. Brother Hodson writes, quote, streams of force are poured into the candidate's aura, which is made to glow with a white radiance and also to expand in size. The astral body is purified, refined, and generally raised in tone and vibratory rate. End quote. Here are three conclusions he gives about the power of Devic inspiration in Masonic ceremonies. 1. Quickens the evolution of the candidate of all Masons of the consciousness within the matter of which the temple and its equivalent is built, and in lesser degree of all consciousness and matter within the range of the influences radiated from the ceremony. 2. Radiates mighty and uplifting forces into the world at large, affecting in various degrees individuals, nations, and all other created beings. 3. Develops in Masons as also in the Diva participates the technique and powers of intercommunion and cooperation. Being a highly trained clairvoyant, Brother Hodson used his gift to document many clairvoyant observations in the lodge of things invisible to most. In closing, I'd like to believe that Muses really exist, but in a broader sense. Muses are said to be higher beings that communicate with us when we are in a lofty state of consciousness, in a heroic mood, and when we are daring and courageous. They contact us through our moments of prayer, meditation, aspiration, and intense labor. Great artists feel their presence, charges them, opens their consciousness, invigorates them, and electrifies all their creative centers. Their presence encourages the artist and Freemason alike, and they feel that they are not alone in their creative labor. Overall, we can conclude that over time, the muses and divas of creative workers have inspired magnificent discoveries and creations. By doing so, they have encouraged delight in human experience, creativity, and thought. Masonry illustrates the teaching that a potential jewel lies within the stone, yet through this jewel may be perceived from many angles and perspectives. It will always reveal beauty. Is everyone capable of finding their muse and expressing their innate creativity in some way? Most of our population believe that some people are creative and others are not. I believe that everyone is a creative worker. In fact, we are each creating this very moment. I loved this piece. Those of you who know me probably know why I loved it. And it is, of course, for those who don't know, I'm very New Agey. I love the idea. In these last two sentences, I believe that everyone is a creative worker. In fact, we are each creating this very moment. I think this is very interesting, coming from a sort of New Age and clairvoyant point of view. I had never read any of these works by Brother Hodson. Regardless of what system of Masonry he comes from, I find, generally speaking, most authors of Masonic works, again, regardless of system, are usually very informative and give a great perspective on some aspect of Masonic philosophy or other. Do I believe that Brother Hodson can see these muses or divas, as it were, in the lodge? Maybe. Perhaps he can sense the inspiration and power in the room, and his mind chooses to manifest these as visions of beauty. We will likely never know, but I like to think that if it helps us to feel inspired, to recognize when we have a calling to do something awesome or great, then that's all that matters. Recognizing those moments and acting on them. Creativity might just be the first act of divinity, a gift inherited by its creations. Last up for this week, I'd like to read a short piece that comes from the Masonic Craftsman magazine titled An Ennobling Science. This was published back in March of 1938. Freemasonry, necessarily shrouded in mystery and secrecy, has always drawn the ire of those who do not understand it. What is Freemasonry, and what does it mean to be a Mason? Freemasonry has its bitter enemies and its doubting despisers. There are some who have formed the opinion that it was created as a substitute for religion, whereas it is only the handmaid to her fair graces. Others presume the labors of Masons are trifling, absurd mysteries, or profane mummeries, whereas there is no subject existing within the range and grasp of the human intellect into which the science of Freemasonry does not enter into the pursuit of wisdom and knowledge. Some ridicule the secrets of Freemasons, declaring them to be either hurtful to the society or wrong in themselves, whereas those secrets are bonds of their mutual fidelity by which they pledge themselves to wisdom and follow virtue. Time was when the members of the craft were denounced as dangerous, and every man of eminence known to be a Mason was called upon to renounce his connection with other social activities. But in the face of all opposition, the fraternity remained calm, and the sun of Masonry has dispersed the clouds which darkened her sky so long. Without territorial possessions, without any other coercing power, Titan, that of morality and virtue, Freemasonry has survived the wreck of mighty empires and resisted the destroying hand of time. No other institution can be compared with it. Every other society sinks into insignificance when placed by the side of Masonry. Freemasonry keeps the noiseless tenor of its way and rejoices in the unsullied happiness of doing good. When did Freemasonry first begin to exist, and why has the institution been thus preserved? Mason's work began with the creation. To understand the measures of weight and light and sound, to unravel, seize upon, and comprehend those unchanging laws by which the earth, the sun, the moon, and the planets are sustained in space, to follow up the changes of the seasons. And in every step of the investigation, as the intellect climbed from lofty truths to truths still more lofty, to pause in profound admiration, to feel the Creator close to the creature, and to adore, this was the first aim of Masonry. This, its task, ever fresh, never ended, a science teeming with new results and adding incentive after incentive to praise and glorify the grand architect of the universe. Freemasonry has been preserved because it instructs its members to worship their almighty maker, to honor and obey the sovereign of the country, to be peaceful in their stations, diligent in their callings, honest in their dealings, respectful towards their superiors, gentle and condescending to their inferiors, merciful toward their enemies, and kind and obliging in all their duties of the common life. Such is the institution which has been preserved to the world, unlimited in its numbers, and scattered over every land and kingdom. The work of the fraternity today is to be true to the original character of the order, to continue to follow the God of nature through all the wonderful variety of its works, and to keep the silence and observe the sacred rules imposed upon the craft. It might be said by some scoffer of, if Masonry be such a pure and ennobling science, should not all Masons be wise and good and temperate and self-denying, full of piety and good words? The answer is that the fitness of any system is not to be tried and condemned because of unworthiness in some. If any man has been led by an impatient curiosity without higher motive to place unhallowed feet on the tessellated pavement, if any has turned the hallowed purposes of Masonry into mere convivial meetings, if any has been content with merely acquiring superficial acquaintance with the craft, let not the system itself be charged with their perversions, their sins, or their folly. An unworthy brother would perhaps have been a worse man if he had not been a Mason. A very interesting piece, in that I find it to be poetic and beautiful, and yet maybe toward the end I don't necessarily agree with what it has to say, in that an unworthy brother would perhaps have been a worse man if he had not been a Mason. I won't argue that that has not happened. If a bad man joins Masonry and because of it he maybe remembers something from a degree that he was charged to do, and that sways him from doing a bad thing in real life. Sure, I'm sure that happens, actually. I don't like the idea of an unworthy brother, someone who is unworthy of the fraternity coming through our West Gate. But I think that's something that we've all thought about, right? Guarding the West Gate is a constant, popular topic among Masons new and old. Old Masons seem to yell from the balconies that we're beating a dead horse when a new Mason comes in and has an opinion on the West Gate. But I think those new voices that are constantly coming in and voicing their opinions on things are actually super important to the fraternity, because, going back to the beginning of this episode, it promotes this progressive moral science. In any case, I hope you really enjoyed these three articles this week. We'll be back very soon with a new episode coming out as well. One more time, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners. You all are awesome, and you have my endless thanks. For those of you who have recently signed up, I will get your little care packages in the mail. I'm getting all those ready to go out very soon this week, hopefully. And keep an eye out in the mail. Thank you all so much for listening, and until next week, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
Hey, Z is gone.